The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends, and thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we review a tough Austin FC loss away in St. Louis. We'll preview the upcoming, essentially a Copa Tejas final against SC Dallas this coming weekend, and then we'll cover some other Austin FC news. My name's Landon Cottom, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-star in an upcoming feature production, Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody, I'm Jeremiah Bentley, and Landon and I and a lot of fun people from the soccer community had the great opportunity to hang out in the barrel room at Austin Beer Works.
How much are we allowed to say about this?
I don't think we're allowed to give a lot of details about this at all. But I feel like we can share the things that were shared on Instagram. But yes, we ended up in a film of sorts for a product that will be launched that people will hear about soon. And I guess overall, without giving too many of the details away, we talked about this, but it's just, it's cool all the different ways the soccer community has to come together. Because there was like a rubber chicken, and there was a scarf with Leslie Cochran's legs on it. And I just like the whole experience was amazing. And I think that everything that we kind of hoped that we would get out of this club, and sort of given how the game went Sunday night, it was like a little delightful part of soccer culture that does not depend on wins or losses or anything else, but just sort of art and like creativity coming together.
Yeah, very well said. We got to hang out with some of the people who are providing just like the pure joy aspect of the Austin FC fan culture. And so even before this match, it was well needed, and even more needed to think back on after Sunday's match.
Yeah, and some of those people decided to give us a fair amount of lines. So when this little promo comes out, it may be dependent upon our acting ability on whether you love it or hate it. And I feel sorry for the people who put that trust in us.
Have you ever done any acting before, Jeremiah? I guess you've done like all your commercial stuff, I guess. So you've delivered lines before.
I mean, those are scripted. I guess the closest thing I've done to that is the pregame fan safety video at Cedar Park Center, which was sort of a spoof for The Office. So I've done a little bit of acting, but not that much.
I'm like very comfortable around microphones now, but still very uncomfortable in front of cameras. So hopefully it comes off okay.
Yeah. It was a fun time.
And I did have somebody, for a good cause. I can't remember who specifically it was that said this, but I was told I have a beard for YouTube, whatever that means.
Oh yeah, I heard that too. I don't know what that means either. I guess that's better than a face for radio, right? A beard for YouTube at least means it should be on video.
Take your wins where you can get them, right? All right, let's jump into Austin FC news. So FACito, Austin FC 2, went away to Vancouver. They drew in regulation and lost in penalties. So they're still unbeaten in 7, but this one was a little bit disappointing. I think you got a chance to watch this one. This was the first one that I was free to watch in 2 or 3 games now. So like Austin was pretty dominant throughout this game, and Vancouver, like Austin's unlucky to score probably 2 or 3 goals in the first 60 minutes. They finally get one in the 62nd minute. Vancouver scores a banger of a goal, catches Damian Loss leaning maybe a little bit. So maybe a touch of blame there, but it was a really nice strike from a free kick pretty far out. So I don't know how much blame you can put on him, but yeah, I mean, I think Austin FC 2 will be pretty unhappy with this result, even though it is a point on the road. They should have won this one.
Yeah, that point does still leave Austin second in the West behind Colorado. So they're moving toward wrapping up a playoff spot. But yeah, that was kind of my impression, is this is one of those 63% ball possession, outshot Vancouver 21-10, have more big chances, and just didn't convert. It was the classic first team kind of a performance we saw a lot of, especially last year when Austin was sort of on a down streak, where like statistically it was a dominating performance, and it just never came to pass in terms of results on the field. So a little bit disappointing, but like I said, still second in the West behind Colorado, ahead of Tacoma. And it was a little bit, because it was played at BC Place, right? And I thought that was a really interesting, it was like one of those COVID games, right? Where you could hear everything that was going on, because it was this giant empty building that you don't get when they play like outside these parks and stuff. That was kind of fun to hear like the coaching going on and, you know, all the other things going on in the match.
Yeah. A couple of other things I took away from this game is, I think I mentioned a few shows back, Micah Burton had mostly been getting like coming off the bench to play on the wing. And then when he was starting on one wing or the other and was not really looking that good, which was pretty disappointing for a young player that we all have so much hope in, that he could be like one of the first big players to come out of the Austin FC system. They moved him inside playing as one of the 10s, like the most attacking midfielder, and then moved Valentin Noel out wide playing as kind of like a playmaking winger. And that has unlocked Micah Burton, and he looks like a star again. Like, still at moments looks young, which is fair because he is young. But as far as just like seeing that potential again, like being hopeful that this kid could be the real deal, like it's a weird thing to say, like, okay, you're not playing well on the wing, so we're going to move you to a more difficult position. And that, like, that worked and is making him look better.
Pull it off. Yeah. And see, mentioned Valentin Noel, so he gets the goal. He got the first Austin goal, so he's looked pretty strong too. That's his sixth of the year. Who else stood out? I think
Sebastian Pinault did not have as good of a game, but he has been playing really well lately. 20 years old. Excited for him. And then Anthony DeAnda gets a start at left fullback again, with Kip Keller being out of this team pretty much full time with the first team now. Joe Hafferty had to move into center back. And then Charlie Asensio has been injured for a while, so they're a little bit slim at fullback now. And so Chris Pinkham was getting minutes at right back. Cech Torres playing left back. They've now, the last two games, I think, Torres been playing right back. And then Anthony DeAnda, 17-year-old academy product, is playing left back. I hadn't got to see him in this game. The kid looks good, man. Again, looks young in moments, and like his inexperience shows at times. But was talking to, I cannot remember who this conversation was with, but talking about just like what Austin FC 2 is going to look like next year, what players are going to stay, what players are going to go. Just like seeing some of these young guys finally come through, like a guy like Charlie Asensio, who's been good for this team. I think he's like 22, 23 years old now. I wouldn't be surprised if some of these guys start getting moved along. And with Anthony DeAnda kind of stepping in, I know Hernan from We Are Austin TV got to know Anthony and like was just a big fan of Anthony, like really hoping he would come through. And whenever he wasn't even making benches at the beginning of the season, I know Anthony was really upset, and I think Hernan was as well. And I told Hernan, I was like, it's competitive, but he's so young. If he can just stick around, keep working really hard, stay dedicated, he's gonna get his moments. Like, there's gonna be turnover, guys are gonna get hurt, whatever, he's gonna get his chances. It's paying off now.
Yeah, he has. You mentioned Hafferty. That's something I've been interested to get your take on. Is so Hafferty and Sal Mazzaferro have been really, really solid in defense, and I think have really helped Damian Loss. Not that Damian Loss needs a lot of help, because he's been a really, really solid keeper too. But also, those guys are what, 20, 21 and 24, or 22 and 24, maybe? Are these real solid center back prospects at some point, or are these just like players who are probably a little bit older and more mature for the competition? And should play like that. And what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about just like players being good for the level, like, I mean, we played, Simon Becher started for Vancouver. We're seeing guys who have like started a lot of games in MLS playing against these guys week in and week out. So I don't think these guys are like overpowered for the level. But as far as like their prospects going forward for the team, Joe Hafferty is the captain. He's been one of the best players on the team, but I also would not be surprised if he wasn't on the team next year just because of his age. Like, they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt like some of these other guys are. Alfonso Ocampo Chavez and Charlie Asensio, I think, are probably both out of contract at the end of the year and are on first team contracts. I would not be surprised. I mean, I would be shocked if either of them got first team contracts again. But like, even though those two guys are good for this team, if you don't think they're ever going to play for the first team. I don't see how you re-sign guys like that. And I, like, as weird as it is to say, your captain, one of your best players, Joe Hafferty, is probably in that same boat.
Yeah. And Mats Farrell, I love that he continues to like not wear chin guards and get away with it. It's one of my favorite things about his about his game is his like short to ankle ratio and how much leg the guy shows. But they've looked really good. So Austin FC 2 plays on Friday, August 25th, back home at Parmer Fields. They haven't been home in a while. They will play against Sporting KC 2. So chance I'll make it out. I would kind of like to do it. Depends if my mother and father-in-law are coming to town, which I don't know if that makes it more likely or less likely. Then I want to sneak away and go to a soccer match, but they don't listen. So it's fine. They won't know what's going on.
All right. What else we have going on this week?
Well, we just like one other little bit of news. This actually came out before, but the 4ATX Foundation every year gives out a series of awards, uses to like a player, to somebody from the community, and then somebody from the Verde Youth Leadership Academy. So they announced recently those award winners that will be announced. They'll officially be presented on October 11th at their annual gala. So Danny Pereira was the winner this year, which is, that guy has really stepped up to become even more than before, sort of very much a focal point of the franchise. And visually, he does a good job with it. I don't guess you were there. I had a chance to see like him and Brad Stuber do a little stand-up bit earlier this year at an event at Q2. And that was super good. But yeah, Danny, for his volunteering efforts, is going to be honored by that. And then Gilbert, do you know anything about Gilbert Tuabonia?
I do not.
So he's amazing. He was a runner. He's from Burundi. He's got a group called a running group called Gilbert's Gazelles. And he's got a foundation that provides clean drinking water back in Burundi. But basically, this town he was in, it was genocide was going on. And the only way he'd get away was to like run. And so he just ran and like, I think ran out of a burning building and like hid it in a field and like ran across like for hundreds of miles to get to like out of his country and into somewhere else. Like he's got an amazing story, a real huge philanthropist. So it's just cool to see Austin FC finding people in the community have made a lot of difference in recognizing them.
All right. Any other Austin FC news before we move on to the game?
Well, I wish there was more to talk about, but I think we can move on to the game. And I think we're going to, we sort of tried to figure out what angle we were going to cover on this. I think we want to talk about the game sort of in the context of where Austin was coming out of the break, like sort of our impressions on this 9-goal sort of disaster. And then like what we think it means for the club for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Before we do that, let's take a quick break. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FVF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FVF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education.
You can go to FVF.law to find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's FVF.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that's served the needs of Central Texans for over 5 decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them the experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials pay an average of $336 a year in bank fees, which works out to 6 Austin FC game tickets per person per year. You'll pay none of those bank fees with Amplify Credit Union.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at Amplify Credit Union. To learn more, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower. All right, we are back. We're going to talk about the loss away in St. Louis. This game and the first St. Louis game were both kind of heartbreaking, but in different ways, it feels like. And I'm not sure how, like, do you have words for how this game made you feel?
No. And I remember thinking last night, because usually these games are on Saturdays, and I have like sort of my day of emotional reaction, which would be the day after the game. And then I have sort of like the next day to like try to make some sense out of it. So I'm a little bit caught in the fact that I didn't have that bonus day, but I don't know. I think no matter how much time one had to reflect on this game on Sunday night, one could not make sense out of all of it. And I guess I know X goals, everybody's favorite stat, but I feel like the weirdest statistical anomaly out of this performance is that Austin had what, like 3.4 to 1.7 X goal advantage. And I would have never thought that from watching that game that night. Like, I feel like it was a pretty good St. Louis team playing a like uninspired, flat, and weirdly aligned Austin team, and just dominating from start to finish. But you know, the numbers didn't necessarily show that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, looking back at the game, I'm not that surprised that Austin's were so high. I am a little surprised that St. Louis's were so low.
Weren't even higher? Yeah.
And like, I mean, credit to them, right? Like, they're, we'll go through the goals here in a second, but it was like a combination of them getting into some danger spots, Austin defending extremely poorly at moments, but then also St. Louis just some incredible finishes, like really well finished balls. I think at halftime, they had two shots on target and two goals. And then they did not have that many. Austin outshot them as well, I believe. And so, like, just, I think this is part of what is special about this St. Louis team is that they play this, this style that is thought of as like a pragmatic thing, a way that you can maybe play with lesser players and still get an advantage, but they're doing it with quite good players and executing really well when they get their moments. And so this is like, I watched some of the Red Bulls game, and like this, they play a similar philosophy to what the New York Red Bulls do. The Red Bulls are lacking in quality at times, and so they have not given up very many goals, but they also don't score many goals. St. Louis is the opposite of that. They're playing that same style, but are also quite good at soccer as well. And so whenever they get those moments, they finish them. And if you give them this many chances, like, yeah, the finishes were good, but if you give them those moments over and over and over, like, they're going to punish you. And Austin learned that the hard way.
Yeah, St. Louis definitely figured out that isolating slow defenders in breakaway situations is a good way to pick up some goals. Do you want to go? Let's go back maybe to the midweek press conference, I think, to set this up, because there was excitement at that point in time. Josh Wolf appeared for the first time in a while in a press conference. Well, I guess it may be the first press availability they've had in a while, I guess, since the League's Cup ended. Yeah. So that everybody other than John Coleman was in training, which I think everybody, all the fans were excited by, thinking we would be able to see the best performance, the best lineup that Austin had available. Generally, the idea seemed to be that the break was good overall, especially in terms of getting people healthy. And I thought it was interesting. I don't know that Wolf addressed Diego being gone. I don't remember this, but I know that like Ethan Finley did. It sort of talked about how much it kind of sucks sometimes to be an MLS player. And have to just move on from a situation, whether you're ready to or not.
Yeah, I think he did a good job of kind of putting that into perspective. And like, this is a thing I did not have on my bingo card early in the season, but like Ethan Finley is kind of becoming one of my favorite players, both in like how he fights on the field, but then also just giving like really like candid, thoughtful answers whenever he gets on the microphone as well. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes into coaching or something, but I think he would be really good in a TV booth or what. Like, he speaks very clearly. He's really smart, thoughtful guy. And also on the, like the leadership board for the players union. And so he talked about that when talking about Diego and like how, he reached out and was like, "Hey, I know this is hard. If there's anything we can do to help, let us know. And we'll hook you up with all the resources we can." And not just as a teammate and a friend, but as like a representative from the Players Association. So that, I thought that was cool, but I think him talking about his own experience getting traded and like, "All right, you're leaving tomorrow. Good luck." And just how, like, how much that experience sucks as a player.
Yeah, it was tough, but it was good to hear that perspective. Cause I feel like that's not what, to your point, it's cool that he agreed or that he took the time to say it, but I just feel like that's a viewpoint that we have not necessarily had sort of in this whole thing, is talking about the player, a player who has to go, and you know, him having experience, having been that player, I think was really good insight to get. So then we get to an hour before the match, and I was very surprised by the lineup that we got. And I wanted to know if you also felt the same way.
Yeah, I think there are a few surprises. First of all, Memo Rodriguez getting the start. With him being so new, I really didn't expect him to be in there. We learned some stuff in the post-game press conference as well that, like, Rigoni is maybe not up to full fitness yet and probably wasn't ready to go more than 45 or so. And so that probably played into this some. And then
I was really surprised to see Lundqvist instead of Lima for sure. And then the other one was, even given that perspective that we got after the match, was like Maxi Arruti up top. Like those are the two that I was like the most surprised by.
Yeah.
Everybody should have been healthy and ready to go.
I think we got explanations for most of those, not in the moment. I was surprised in the moment, but afterwards, I think Wolf pretty much said is with Zardes and Rigoni that they weren't ready to go more than like 45. And so he didn't want to start them. And so I think that's why you see Arruti. He ends up coming out at halftime with concussion protocol. And so again, like you're not sure how much Zardes can go. So you throw Bruin on at that point. So it's kind of a tough situation there. But I think the one that I was maybe shouldn't have been, and maybe I'm silly for being surprised, I was really expecting to see Alex Ring start in the midfield.
Yeah, me too. I was too. And I was a little bit surprised not to see him there playing at all after, like, Owen Wolf has gotten so many minutes at this point. And also it seems like a veteran presence like Ring would be important for Austin to have on the field to deal with sort of what St. Louis was doing. Now, all those guys came on as subs later on. And if you look just at sort of that, the game flow chart, like Austin begins to dominate the chances, but the second half still ends up with, what, 4 goals for St. Louis and 3 for Austin?
Yeah.
It's a wild second half.
Yeah. Should we just go through the goals quickly as we can?
Let's go for it. I mean, we have to spend a lot of time. And, you know, we can kind of weave in maybe when we think about people who are particularly responsible for goals, or good or bad, maybe we'll just kind of work in some player notes alongside that.
Yeah. So coming out to start, Austin was playing a bit more conservatively in certain aspects of their game. So they were not forcing playing out of the back. We're on goal kicks and restarts. We're just kicking it long, happy to get the ball up the field. And so in that way, we're playing a little bit conservative, but 22 minutes in, they give up a free kick. Edward Leuven is one of the best set piece takers in the league. Tim Parker scored a header on us on a set piece in the first game and is a beast in the box. And I talked about how in that first game against St. Louis that Kip Keller was responsible for several of the goals, and that having Matt Hedges in the game, I think would kind of change that aspect of it. And I still think it did, but in this particular moment, Matt Hedges was the guy closest to Tim Parker as he streaks across the box, wins a header and heads it in. So it was a nice ball into the box, a really good header in the end. But like, you have to know where Tim Parker is in the box. Like you need to be just like watching him essentially, because you know that's where they're going to go. So I'll say this a lot, a good goal, but we could have done better.
Yeah, I think that'll be the theme all throughout the evening. So it's 1-0. And then Austin just looked, it's always hard to read kind of what's going on with players, but I mean, they look tired and they look tired early. And I don't know if it was from all the running, but I felt like 30 minutes in, Austin felt like they were getting pretty ragged. And I know some people attribute it as just like general effort, but like they seemed really leggy, honestly. Well, it was super. I mean, one thing to be factored in is like the weather in St. Louis was worse than the weather in Austin is even now in terms of like being a professional athlete trying to run around for 90 minutes.
Yeah. And in this game, this is a trend that we've seen before where they come out, they try to press. The press looks good for 20 minutes or so, and then it stops looking good and it becomes a liability. And that we saw that in this game. Like Austin came out pretty aggressive, winning a lot of balls, not able to make anything of it, like not completely in sync as they were going forward, but giving St. Louis a lot of trouble as they were trying to get up the field. And then, yeah, like you said, it just like falls apart. And it, like, to me, I just feel like if this happens so frequently, like, let's just not do that anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. If it happens every game, you know, it's not, they're not magically going to get somehow differently fit. So maybe, yeah, maybe don't do it this way and try something else. So it's, Austin almost makes it to halftime. And then we get a Nicholas Gia, the first Nicholas Giannichini goal. And he was, I don't know what his like player rating was, but he was a menace for certain on the night all the way around.
Yeah, he was good. I think this goal plays into kind of Austin struggles building the ball up in the attack in that first half. So in the first St. Louis game, Austin did a pretty good job of breaking their press and kind of like the press didn't give us a ton of trouble in the first half in that first game. In this one, they were bothering us from the beginning, and it like St. Louis is good at doing that. And they are really trying to take away the middle of the field. So they had four guys pressed up pretty high at all times. And then whenever they like saw a pressing trigger, it'd be like six guys pressed up really high, but really kind of clamping down on Owen Wolf and Danny Pereira there in the midfield, making it hard to get balls into them. But then as we would play the ball wide to the fullbacks, there were moments where we could have gotten the ball back inside. And I think John Gallagher especially was guilty of this, just like not looking for it. And I don't know if this is a direction he got, if he's used to playing on that left side where he's going to turn on his right foot and like more naturally looks into the center. But there are moments where he had Danny Pereira or Owen Wolf open and quite a bit of space to the inside, and he would turn and force a long ball up the field to Finley or to like on the other side to Rodriguez, who weren't really in an advantageous position. And it's just like, I'm just going to get the ball there because I think that's what I'm supposed to do. And in this, for this goal, like that's what we try. There's some space inside and Gallagher never even looks that way. Plays the ball up to Finley. Finley's kind of trying to hold it up on his own, loses the ball. The center backs are pushed up kind of high because we're kind of in that building phase and we lose the ball. I think Leuven gets the ball, plays a really nice long ball through to Gioacchini, who is already running full speed the other direction as soon as we lose it. He ends up 1v1 with Cascante. Cascante is just backpedaling and backpedaling and backpedaling and backpedaling.
Oh, yeah.
And Gioacchini cuts to the inside, tucks it into the far corner. Again, a good finish, like a solid finish, but Cascante has to do better here. And like he'll do it again later, but Josh Wolf was saying in the post-game press conference, like, show these guys to the in line, give Brad Stuver a chance with the angle on the shot, where it's like, if you cut him to the in line, yeah, he's still close, but you can't just keep backing up and backing up and then also let him cut back inside where he has a much more advantageous angle on the goal.
Yeah, there was no aggression at all from Cascante. Now it's as good a time as any. Like, is this the worst game in an Austin FC jersey?
Cascante?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably had more disastrous single moments, but as far as a full body of work for 90 minutes, this is his worst game.
Okay. Yeah. I felt the same way. And we get to the half. So Aruti, we mentioned he comes out right before. I think he comes out in extra time in the first half, but like he probably should have come out earlier, right? Did you get that impression? Like, He was kind of wandering around. Like,
did he go back on the field after they checked him?
I thought he went back on the field after they checked him because I felt like there was maybe 5 or 6 minutes, and maybe he was just off the field and they're playing down a man. But I felt like there's a pretty decent sized gap between when he went down and when Bruin came on.
Yeah, he did look visibly shaken though in the moment. So I maybe it should have happened earlier, but probably a good idea that he was taken off the field. Hopefully that was no long-term issues from that one.
Right, right. So we make it to half. Austin's down 2-0. Bruins in. Austin comes out and looks not great. I mean, I think St. Louis is in the first part, until this goal comes especially, we're still in the aggressive. This is another Giacchini goal unassisted to make it 3-0 St. Louis. And the rout was really on at that point.
This one is one of the more frustrating goals to me, talking about Cascante's bad game. So Austin is, we're down 2-0, right? So we're having to play a bit riskier than we would have otherwise, which opens you up for transition attacks even more. And so Austin's pushing, throwing a lot of numbers up. And then as St. Louis does, because they're really good at it, just play some really good combination in transition, spring Alm in behind. He plays a long, hard cross, or sorry, a low, hard cross around the last defender. Giacchini gets a foot on it. Stuver makes a really nice save to pull it out of the goal.
This is the one where he makes that save. Okay.
He kind of like reaches right around the ball and throws it back out, which is really impressive from him. But then Giacchini springs back up and is able to win it and get it back into the goal while Stuver's still on the ground. So Cascante, this is the one that was most frustrating to me. So Cascante is tracking Giacchini on that back post run. He's not fast enough to get there and win that first ball. So if you are too slow to stop the first attempt, I at least want to see some, like, the awareness and the effort to stop the follow-up, or like try to win that follow-up. As he gets beat by the first one, he just kind of pulls up and just kind of like slows up his run into the goal. And so he ends up missing the first one, and then misses the second one because he's just like not paying attention or not trying hard enough. And that is the most frustrating part. It's like, if someone beats him for speed, fine. We knew that was going to happen. But like the second attempt there, I feel like he could have done more there and just didn't.
Yeah. After that, then, Mimber Rodriguez almost picks up a goal after that. What, 50, 56, 57. That was a well played strike that did not come to pass, but good shot from him. Good save from Roman Berkey, who had like a really strong night overall, I generally think, you know.
Yeah.
Although Berkey he let some stuff in late, but Berkey was really solid and definitely denied also some opportunities that maybe would have made a difference in terms of overall momentum.
Yeah, I think just after that Rodriguez chance, Austin makes the triple change. They take off Lundqvist, Rodriguez, and Finley. They put on Rigoni, Zardes, and Lima. And so I was trying to get a hold on to what shape this was in the moment, and was struggling for a lot of the rest of the game. But so this, going back to the starting lineup, the Apple TV broadcast had us listed as a 4-4-2, which I saw some people online talking about like a formation change. I don't think the formation was so different from what we normally see in the first half.
With the second part of the two being Driussi, is that right?
Yeah, but like Driussi kind of does that anyway. Like, like we defend in a 4-4-2 and then they'll shift to like a 4-3-3, but then, like, because they're pressing so high, Owen was dropping deeper, so it was more like a 4-2-3-1. But Driussi likes to get high. So it's like, it's very nebulous and it's hard to actually put a name on it. So that all that to say, like, I don't think it was so different from what Austin normally does. But then whenever they make
Zardes
this triple,
gets on. Yeah.
Yeah, this triple substitution, they like cut to Lima and you can read his lips saying back three. And so it ends up being, this is my best guess here. It was, do you remember way back early in the season, like the very beginning of the season, Austin was trying that 3-2-2-3 shape, but like eventually went to like straight up wing backs where the wing backs were going up and down. But there were a few games where they were kind of doing that weird shift thing where they would defend with a back four, but then in attack, one fullback would become a winger and the other one would become like a center back in a back three. I think we kind of went to that shape because Rigoni was playing what would have been like the wing back position, but he wasn't tracking back and defending all the way back. And so I think it was kind of that like back four to back three transition with like the still ending up in attack in like the 3-2-2-3 shape. And Austin starts getting a lot of chances after this. Like, this is where the majority of our shots come from and our big chances come after this moment. And I think partially due to St. Louis like being up 3-0 and not having to try that hard anymore, partially out of desperation from Austin, but maybe a little bit just like the change of shape did affect a little bit too. Who knows?
Yeah. And Austin finally picks up a goal. It's a Driussi penalty. I feel like a pretty clear.
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty clear and obvious penalty there. I know. I think there's a little bit of complaint about it. So I saw what did they say? He's 7-for-7 from the spot in his Major League Soccer career. So pretty dependable performance there. And Austin, like you said, like with the change with the subs and the change in shape and everything going on, it seemed like there was a little bit of hope at that point in time. Like the momentum chart again is like really in Austin's favor. They're generating chances, but the killer goal comes just a few minutes later. It's the 72nd minute.
Yeah, Samuel Adeniran, who I think he was playing for San Antonio last season. He was I think he was the starting striker in the teenager game against us when Seattle came here.
Oof.
I think he was a starter and they pulled him and put on Rui Diaz, and Rui Diaz scored that banger. So not great memories of Samuel Adeniran right. for Austin FC, but Adeniran, yeah, he receives the ball in behind, ends up again like more or less 1v1 with Cascante in the box. Again, no real pressure, not standing him up, not forcing him one direction or the other. Adeniran just walks in, probably, I don't know, eight, nine yards out, hits a really clever little finish with the outside of his left boot. And again, a really good finish, but you got to do better there. You can't let him get that close without having any pressure or forcing him to pick a direction.
Yeah, that one kind of takes the air out of it for a while. So it's 15 more minutes without a goal. Then Austin grabs one back. Will Bruin picks up a nice goal, assisted by John Gallagher, Danny Pereira at 87. So we're kind of late in the match for anything to happen. Do you have anything remarkable about that one?
I mean, like Austin was finally getting into the attacking third and kind of playing those wide triangles leading to Gallagher getting in behind, playing it across. Like we were finally getting stuff like that to work, but it was just so late and so many goals behind that it almost like I struggled to feel encouraged by it at that point in time.
Right. Well, cause you've got 7-8 minutes of playing time left and you're down two goals. So there's no reason to expect a lot out of that. And then Austin would give up another goal before the end of regular play, a Tomas Ostrek goal. So what does Lewin get? 3 assists on the night? Like the guy was all over the place.
I'll take this opportunity to criticize Danny Pereira's defending, as I feel like I've done several times this season. There's a moment earlier in the game where Lewin has the ball probably like 30 yards out and Danny Pereira is just walking. Like no urgency, not trying to put any pressure. And so Lewin just sets himself up, takes a crack. And that's when he hits the post, hits the crossbar that one time. You remember that shot?
I do remember that shot. Yeah.
Stuver's got no chance.
Didn't even have time to react.
No chance. And that's 100% on Danny Pereira. Like a player of that caliber, not close to goal, but close enough to shoot. Like you have to put pressure on him. And Danny Pereira's like, yeah, he's tired. I get it. You're tired. But like, this is, if you're going to play in that position in that part of the field, you have to show more urgency in those moments. And in this goal, this Ostrak goal, Danny Pereira, again, Lewin has the ball, I don't know, 25 yards from goal. Danny Pereira's kind of jogging at best. And so Lewin doesn't end up really doing anything super consequential, but he doesn't put any pressure on there. He's able to pick out a pass into the box. Ostrak just kind of cuts, takes one touch inside. And again, a really good finish, like bends it in far post, like nothing Stuver can really do there. But like you just have to have more pressure, put more urgency in those moments. And he just didn't do it. And it's a trend for Danny Pereira at this point.
Yeah. So that is, oh,
that's 5-2.
That's 5-2. I'm losing track. Rigoni gets one back.
Yeah. Make again, some pretty good combination, stretching the field pretty well. Driussi gets a shot off, it gets deflected, falls to Rigoni on the backside, and he pretty clever finish to kind of like shape like he's going to hit it back post and tucks it into the near post. So, I mean, if nothing else, good. This hopefully Rigoni can build some confidence out of that. And then the last one comes. Do you remember the time on this one?
90 plus five. I feel like it was basically the last action of the match.
Yeah, so Stuver, I think, gets a long, kind of weak shot or a long ball or something. He ends up with it in the box and is a little careless trying to restart play quickly, probably a little more risky than he would be in a closer game. Just kind of throws a ball over the top because he has ring on the backside, doesn't put enough on it. A dinner on
hits back. A dinner on right in the foot, basically, right?
He heads it. So he heads it down to himself, right. Takes one touch. Is 1v1 with Stuver. Stuver's able to get back and like get set, but it's 1v1 from 18 yards out or something. And again, a really nice finish from a dinner on. But I saw quite a bit of criticism of Brad Stuver in this, like not just for this goal, but in this whole game online. Watching the goals back, aside from this last one, I don't think Stuver is the most culpable on any of them besides that very last one. And like, has he spoiled Austin FC fans for how good he has been over the last few years? Or am I being too easy on him in this moment?
Well, I'd say Fat Mob gave him a 3.0, which is the lowest I think I've ever seen anybody get from Fat Mob. So I feel like there's probably a little bit. Look,
FOTMOB has not watched the games. They're going the games strictly off of just like box score stats. Don't get me started on FOTMOB ratings and people basing their opinions of players on that.
I guess I would say he undoubtedly had a bad night. Does it mean that like all these people that have been waiting for him to fail for whatever reasons like are harping about it? Absolutely. But
I'm saying he didn't have a bad night.
You're saying he didn't have a bad night? Did. Yeah, he had a bad night. Maybe he was
which,
not. Maybe
which
he
goals were his fault aside from that one?
Maybe he didn't have as bad of a day as Julio, but he didn't. How many shots did he stop?
Well, if they're shooting from 8 yards out with nobody in front of you, how many are you gonna stop? Like you're not supposed, like you're not expected to stop those.
I don't. I'm gonna have to disagree with you. I don't.
They gave up
six goals. It's a team collapse. That one stood out. I will agree with that.
I'll say this. Watching the Efecito game the other day, a lot of talk is among fans, among media, talking about Damian Loss's 12 clean sheets on the season. And as good as Damian Loss has been, the 12 clean sheets has far more to do with the defenders standing in front of him.
I agree with you. That's why I talked earlier about Haferty and Mazzaferro being so strong. That has led to a lot of that. It made him
better.
And I'll
say again, like the opposite is also true. Getting six dropped on you is not necessarily all on the goalkeeper. I think Stuver was fine in this game. I probably have 7 or 8 or 9 players I would pick that were worse in this game than him.
Well, let's go into some of those players then. How about that? Let's talk about. There were two more shots I want to talk about. One because I finally saw. Like, did you see Giassi Zardes's kind of whiff on the what was that? Like 78 minutes in.
Oh man,
We didn't get a very good view of it in the game, and then we didn't get a very good view of it on the replay. But I finally saw somebody on Twitter or whatever it is now, like post it, and it was a great opportunity. Like literally kicked right at the keeper. That was super disappointing.
No, he just like didn't kick it at all. Like it just like popped up in the air and the keeper.
Well, it
just
popped. Okay,
it. Like
that's true. It came off him. Yeah, you're right. I'm not sure that he made an attempt. That's a butt goal that he normally scores.
Yeah, it's like it's a little behind him, and it's another one of these moments where just like if you don't put it exactly where, like in an ideal position for him, he's not agile or fast enough anymore to be able to do anything about it. And this is a particularly embarrassing example of that.
And then the other one I wanted to go to is like, just because Jared Stroud's kind of a turd, like Jared Stroud tried to chip Brad from, I don't know, 60, 70 yards out. I don't know what that was. But it's, I would expect nothing else out of Jared Stroud than to make that shot.
Yeah. Okay. What else do we have? There's a lot to talk about on the back end of this one. We talked about Julio Cascante. We talked about Brad Stuver. Memo Rodriguez, not great. I didn't think he was especially embarrassing compared to what else happened in this game, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt here just because he's new, kind of still slotting into a new team, but he wasn't nothing to be super excited about. What else we got?
But I would say like his time comes a little bit from sort of our discussion, you know, around health and like, who else are you going to put there at this point? Like if Ercone's not that healthy and you go with Sonny Guadarrama's deal and put Owen Wolf on the wing and Alex Ring in the midfield, maybe, but that's about it. It's like, we didn't have a lot of choices there. Like, how'd you think Alex Ring did in the time that he had?
I thought he was good. I thought he was one of the good, like, injections of energy. And it's, I want to be careful and not like look at that and say, like, Alex Ring is the answer to all our problems because of the game state, bringing on fresh legs and such heat. Like he better look like a breath of fresh air in that situation. That being said, like, I'll take his performance with a grain of salt, but I would also like to see him in the midfield. And like Josh Wolf said in the post-game press conference, and I don't think I ever thought this. Did we ever think that like Josh Wolf wanted Alex Ring at center back? That was always just out of necessity, right?
Right. Yeah. I don't think that was ever the impression that he wanted him there. I mean, obviously he did. Alex Ring didn't start the first game in the midfield. So Josh Wolf did not have as a first choice midfielder, but I don't think he ever really saw him as a center back. And luckily we should basically be done with that with, Leo Vaisanen being questionable for this match and hopefully back some for Dallas, which leads you to the, I mean, have you had enough of Owen Wolf in the midfield for now?
Yeah, I mean, again, like the kid is young. I don't want to be too hard on Owen Wolf, but I would like to see Alex Ring start in that spot. I think he's looked good enough in the minutes we've seen. And then just Owen has like clearly not playing at high a level as he was earlier in the season. He's very young. He's played a lot of minutes. Like, I think it's time to make that switch.
Anybody else? One thing I thought was a little bit interesting. So the post-game press conference started a little bit late. And Will Bruin talked about, this is not a game that we just move on from, which I think is a very frustrating thing that comes up after every loss that Austin FC says to fans. I thought both he and Josh Wolf in the post-game press conference like seemed to take some accountability and ownership of it. And it felt like a different, I mean, we've had a lot of losing post-game press conferences in 2021 and 2023. This felt a little bit different in terms of tone and in terms of sort of understanding that something needs to change.
Wolf was uncharacteristically like open and vulnerable in this press conference, which I thought was interesting, right? Like in that midweek one, like we got very little information out of him. And in this one, I feel like he seemed like strangely open, and he seemed sad and like very disappointed, but like much more willing to like give honest answers than he normally is, which I thought was strange.
Yep, strange. Hopefully good. And I saw some speculation that maybe the reason that the press conference was a little late was because there was this like locker room come to Jesus. We're watching Ted Lasso again, so I'm very familiar with the post-game come to Jesus locker room conversations. Maybe this is part of it too. So
what are your thoughts on Mr. Wolf these days, Jeremiah?
Oh man, I'm kind of done, I think, at this point in time. Like I haven't seen. Maybe I'll be wrong. Hopefully I'll be wrong. And 3 weeks from now, I'll be like, oh, remember silly Jeremiah from 3 weeks ago had a different opinion. But I mean, I'm on the like, give Davey a shot and see what happens, cut loose, especially with like the Tippers announcing that they're got rid of Savarese, right? Just tonight. I don't know if you saw that, right? When we were coming on to record.
Yeah.
But I don't see any downside to moving on at this point in time from the Josh Wolf experiment.
Yeah, I'm like, I
hashtag,
still think
hashtag
it's
Wolf
true.
Out, I guess. I mean, if I think I didn't give you, that was kind of a wishy washy.
You have to pick a side
way to get to a journey. So that is my side for sure. Go ahead. Sorry.
I still think there are like a certain subset of the fan base who probably puts a little too much stock into Wolf being like the main problem with this team. I still think the roster just isn't that good. But I also have seen that like in a game like this, where we have 3 weeks to prepare, we know exactly how this team is going to try to beat us and don't really do anything different to stop it. Like that is very frustrating to me. And like that, there have been games this season, like not long ago, where we've lost and I've seen people come after Wolf and like say, this is 100% Wolf's fault. When looking at the game, the way the game played out was, I'm thinking like the game plan worked here and we just weren't executing, not finishing chances. That was not the case in this game. Like we looked like garbage. The game plan was never working until like we're 3-0 down. And like at that point, it's tactics free zone essentially. And we're just like throwing everything at the wall we can. And some of it eventually started working. It's hard to give anybody a lot of credit for that, right? Like, and so this is not one of those games where like, okay, the plan was there, the players weren't good enough to execute it. The players were not good and the plan was not good. And that, like that get, that frustrates me as far as like a coaching and a game plan thing goes. And so all that being said, like I am still pretty ambivalent about Josh Wolf. I'm probably never going to be the guy to like publicly call for anybody's job unless they're doing something particularly heinous. I'm also not going to be a person who makes my entire identity about hating a soccer coach. But I still have a little bit of like solace knowing that Rodolfo Borrell knows what a good coach looks like. If he thinks Wolf can handle it at any point in the next year, maybe he'll give him a chance. But also like, okay, let's talk about this scenarios going forward. Let's say Borrell does not think Josh Wolf is the guy for the job, but there's not any great candidates around right now. He knows he's got this big rebuild coming around in the winter. Do you think it's harmful to keep him around until the end of the season? If they don't have a great candidate to come in, do you think you just cut the losses and let Arno do it for a while and then bring in whoever you want whenever that person is available?
I mean, I would cut my losses because I would imagine that, I mean, many of these guys are the core of the team. Like we talked about earlier in the year, we're excited about are kind of on long-term deals. And I worry that there's some like permanent damage being done to the locker room or to the psyche of the team if Borrell doesn't show some amount of like, if Wolf's not the guy and he doesn't like show aggressiveness and like moving on, like I worry about what that message that sends to guys like Stuver and Gallagher and Driussi that all signed long-term deals in the offseason. So like I almost feel like we're at the point where like it's time to just like recognize that this is not working out and start over. And I feel like letting Davey run the season out and probably also not be the guy long-term is maybe the best way to go.
Yeah. And it's like, again, like there's just like this information gulf where we don't really know.
Yeah.
But I heard on Extra Time, I didn't get to see this game, but on Extra Time, the episode that published this Monday, they were talking about Portland going away and getting battered against Houston. And they were talking about the players looking like they had given up. They were not playing for this coach anymore. And we've seen some frustration, but I wouldn't say Austin FC players have given up at any point, would you? Like maybe there's been like a game or two where they've looked like that, but like even in the St. Louis game, they didn't give up. They were still fighting. They were just doing a bad job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but you could read that into the fact that they tire so quickly. I think, and I think some people have, like if they were walking around, but it's because they had worn them, and you could debate, like, were they not like running even though they were worn out because they don't like the coach, or were they just like physically unable to run around? And that's the thing. We don't know. Like, we're just speculating for the sidelines.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you score 3 second half goals when you've given up on a game.
That's my
counter argument to that, but
and that's a different outcome from than Portland had against Houston for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to know. Like, if the players are done with him, sure, but like if they don't want him to leave, like I don't see the harm. I don't know. There's just so much we don't know that I wish we could, and I would have a much stronger opinion about something one way or another if I did have more information, but I don't, and so I'm not going to pretend to.
All right, well, let's take another break. Let's talk about Dallas. Then let's talk about the rest of the season. Kind of see where we go from here beyond just what Austin does coaching-wise.
All right, hang tight. We'll be right back.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Covert Ford. The Coverts have been meeting the needs of local car buyers for 114 years because of their service, financial expertise, and support after the sale.
In addition to supporting car buyers, Covert's an important part of the soccer community and the official automotive partner of Austin FC.
This month, Covert Ford is highlighting a 2023 Ford F-150 XL, stock number 223-0658. You can get this truck for 1.9% for 36 months and 90 days until your first payment with approved Ford credit.
If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, be sure to check out covertford.com.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. Thanks to Sage Wilson Realty, we'll be giving away 2 tickets to an upcoming match, which is not as far away as it has been when we've been doing this the last few shows. So fill out the form in the show notes to enter for your chance to win.
Again, this is made possible by Sage Wilson Realty. If you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Be sure to check them out online at sagewilson.com. All right, we are back. Jeremiah, let's look forward. We'll get to the FC Dallas preview, but let's also just take a moment to look at the table and kind of where we're at and what we have looking forward for the rest of the season.
Let's do that. So Austin, we mentioned this before, like that you can move up and down and particularly down the table quickly. So last week, or entering this match, Austin was in 5th in the West. Austin now sits 7th in the West, tied with Houston Dynamo, 1 point ahead of Vancouver and Minnesota, and 2 points ahead of Dallas, which is currently in 10th outside the playoff race. So there's, you know, that swing can happen quickly with this match in Frisco this very week. So, you know,
we could drop to 10th in one more loss.
And what, yeah, one more loss.
Drop us to 10th.
And there's a little bit of a gap between 10th and like 11th and 12th, but you know, Austin is in no easy spot, and Austin does not have a super easy schedule going forward with being on the road in Dallas, coming back home to play Seattle, who's in 4th. Then they go to New England, who's in 3rd in the East, before hosting Portland on September 17th. So, like, the next 3 matches, just like this St. Louis match, are really tough, and Austin's going to have to be on their best performance in order to get results here. And we talked a little bit, I think, before last week's show about it, the 4 matches after this break are really going to sort of be make or break time for Austin FC, and they are definitely proving themselves to be that way, especially losing the first one of those 4.
Yeah, so I think you never know the exact number of points you need to make the playoffs, right? But I think probably like mid to upper 40s is going to be kind of like the safety zone. And so if you look at it that way, like there is still quite a bit to do. It is doable with the number of games left, but it's not a given. Like it's a slippery table from this point and only harder going forward, like you just mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the upside of it is Austin should be, at least over the next couple matches, probably getting healthier as it goes, because these guys who can't go 90 hopefully will be able to go 90. So that'll be the advantage that Austin has. They'll get every player back. Austin did not have a very busy summer transfer window. So like some of these other squads have added other players, and we've seen results out of that already, and we'll continue to see people being integrated into the squad. And so like that's going to be a tough thing on the Austin side. So I think they have to like sort of I hope that everybody gets healthy and finds form, which is, you know, what I wrote in the question is like, what all is wrong and how does it get better? And I don't know that there's like one simple answer for that, because it's just like, this league is a weird league and this team could get hot, even though it doesn't seem like there's anything in recent performance that would indicate that they will. But also, you never know. I'm not going to be surprised by a 10th place finish, and I'm not going to be surprised by a 4th place finish, honestly, out of Austin FC this year.
Yeah, at this point, I'd be much more surprised by the 4th place finish.
Well, okay.
It's 5th. How about it just feels, I don't know. Maybe I'm being, this is recency bias, and I'm being overly emotional, but I guess like if we were to give the positive spin, if like Leo Vicen is probably, like they said, he's been, as of this weekend, he was like 4 or 5 days into training with the full team. So probably not going to start against Dallas, but maybe could be ready to do so in the one or two matches after that. Rigoni will probably be maybe ready to start against Dallas. If not, then maybe the game after that. How excited you are about Rigoni starting, I'll leave that up to you. And so, yeah, I mean, I could see it going that way, but like I'm pretty pessimistic at the moment.
That's fair. I mean, I think the most likely outcome is the downside outcome where Austin ends up in the 8-9 game, or maybe ends up just outside of that. Although Vancouver is sort of in relatively similar form to Austin and about to play a bunch of games on the road. You know, it's just like the most unsatisfying possible outcome, I think, would be to end up in one of those like very bottom spots and maybe make it the first round and get blown out, or maybe not.
Yeah. Should we talk about the Dallas game coming up?
Yeah, let's talk about the Dallas game. So we just mentioned Dallas is 10th in the West. They played one fewer game than Austin, so they do have a game in hand despite being 3 points behind. Made a pretty decent little run in the League's Cup until they ran into Messi, just like everybody in the League's Cup. I think they have had like 19 days off since they played before, so maybe that is the thing that's in Austin's favor, where they're off just enough to be rusty.
They didn't play this last weekend, so this is going to be their first game since that Miami loss.
Yeah. Kopitehas match, for better or worse. Like, we've talked about our opinions on the trophy, and mine will only be resolved till I find out whether we keep it or not. Like, it's the greatest trophy in the world if Austin wins, and it's like a worthless piece of plastic if we don't. And I think there's going to be a lot of people that go up for that match. Jackson, I will not, but it's okay.
I'm also not going to be able to make it this time. What are the scenarios here? What does Austin need to do to win Kopitehas?
So if I remember right, Austin, like a win gives Austin Kopitehas for sure. And I believe it doesn't, a draw still to put Austin in a position to take Kopitehas based upon the recent performances.
I knew this at one point.
Yeah, these it's hard to figure this out because, like, again, there were like matches that Austin and Dallas and Houston all played against each other, didn't count. But with a win or a draw in Frisco, Austin picks up Kopitehas. And there are other like weird scenarios beyond that where the different results can happen. But like, Austin just needs to get some kind of result this weekend to take the trophy back to Austin.
Yeah. And like you said, in that case, it's the greatest trophy that's ever existed.
Absolutely. What do we expect? They're super familiar. Like, we're super familiar with FC Dallas. So they also beat Austin on May 13th. Austin pick up a 3-0 win on June 21st. Both those were at Q2. Like, what do people look for? Like, what do we need to know about FC Dallas that we don't already know?
Yeah, they've struggled more offensively than they have in years past. But they, like, Alan Velasco has kind of come on and been finding forms. They've been playing him a bit more centrally than on the wing as of late, and so he's looked good. They have two big new signings. The latest reports are that they'll be quote unquote available to play in this game, but one of them is Liam Fraser, who played for Toronto and the Crew, I think, and then spent a year in Belgium and is coming back and is signed for Dallas, but I don't know like when he got to town or if he'll, like, how ready he'll be to play at the moment. The other is one that I am, for sentimental reasons, pretty jealous of, which it's a guy named Asier Iarramendi. And Iarramendi is a Basque player who played for Real Sociedad in San Sebastian the years that I was living there. And so I was really hoping that Austin FC might get a Basque player, a guy who played for Sociedad or something at some point, but Dallas beat us to it. These guys are both like deep lying midfielders, which Dallas needs at this point, but like they're not going to be the guys coming in like making huge changes, even if they do play. Like they're not like this new striker who's going to come in and score a hat trick against us. Watch Iramendi score a hat trick against us now. But yeah, I mean, we've seen this team. And one thing that worries me is like, how did FC Dallas put up 4 against Inter Miami? And it was playing in transition. And like, we've been bitten by FC Dallas's transition play in the past. And like, we're clearly not doing anything to stop teams from beating us in transition. So I'm pretty nervous about that part of this game. If we can keep them from beating us in transition over and over, like a lot of teams have.
Yeah, I remember in that game thinking like, how is this team? So Dallas has scored 25 goals in 23 matches. And like, you look at the talent up and down, even the, like the front line, like how's this team only scoring barely a goal a game? And so, yeah, hopefully they haven't figured that out. The League Cup performance, they did score, but they've scored 11 goals. They scored 11 goals in their 4 matches in League Cup. So maybe they are figuring it out, which would be a lot of trouble for Austin.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, any other thoughts on this one before we move on?
No, let's hope that hopefully we'll be in a lot better mood next week.
I mean, yeah,
talking about the game on Saturday, not that we are right now, where it seems like there's sort of a bleak future for Austin FC.
Talk about a morale swing, right? Like, we're already all kind of in the mud at the moment. And if Austin wins this one, maybe it's like a little like mood boost that we all need. But if they don't, man, it's going to be bad.
It will be. So let's all hope mood boost. Austin picks up the win. Austin moves back up to like 6th in the table ahead of Houston. Solidifies a playoff position a little more, and we have a very different show next week, but it's going to be tough sledding, no doubt, from now until the end of the season. And then I think, you know, like soft season is going to be super interesting. So like, I'm excited about there. Hopefully we'll just have some moments of enjoyment between now when Rodolfo Borrell overhauls the roster.
Yeah. So we can only hope. All right. Before we wrap up, we'd like to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Come find us online at LVAHero87 and JBentley_ATX on Twitter, and then at Moon Tower Soccer on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And then sign up for our Patreon. We always appreciate the support. It helps us greatly, both in justifying the amount of time we spend doing this and also just the moral support of knowing people care about it. And then also sign up for Phil West's Substack called Verde All Day. Jeremiah, what should folks know about that?
So Phil West, you know, we talked a little bit last week about how Striker was on hiatus. So Phil has continued to provide the same content. Phil has written 6 articles this week on his Verde All Day Substack. So you can find that at philwest.substack.com. It's, I believe, $50 a year if you want to subscribe for the annual membership. And if you go to philwest.substack.com/moontower, you can get a 20% discount. It's like, we love Phil's work. Continue to support Phil and whenever we can be possible. And so we appreciate Phil giving us a discount code to share with you all. So please go out there, do that. If for no other reason than in that post-game press conference after that match, Phil West and Jorge Iturralde were the only 2 media members that showed up. And that just shows like Phil's commitment to this team and Phil's commitment to providing coverage that you don't get anywhere else. Like, support Phil so he can continue to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week to cover the Austin FC news of the week and review the FC Dallas match. And then we'll preview 2 games in the Seattle match and the New England match. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll catch you next time.
Thing for nothing, so you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.